Dr. Dannenberg will be here to share with us the work that CDC is doing. So Dr. Dannenberg was, from between 2001 and 2010, was the Associate Director for Science and Division of Emergency and Environmental Health Services at the National Center for Environmental Health. He has recently retired from CDC, but is still working with his colleagues there on this work. And he's now a clinical professor in the Department of Environmental and Occupational Health Sciences in the School of Public Health, and as an affiliate professor, Department of Urban Design and Planning in the College of Built Environments at the University of Washington in Seattle. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Okay. What I'll be talking about is health impact assessment, and I think the key message for this audience is health impact assessment is different from cost-benefit analysis, but there are some links, and I will get to what those links are. Health impact assessment is one of the tools that we have for looking at how environmental health and health at the table and how health fits into public policy decisions. Just very brief background, let me start with a disclaimer. I am currently a consultant to CDC, so anything I say does not represent CDC, and they always want me to be very careful to say that. The National Center for Environmental Health is the environmental health part of the Centers for Disease Control vision, looking for safer, healthier people in a safer, healthier environment. As part of the background, as you all know, we're spending more and more on medical care, and the whole field of public health is how can we do public health interventions that can reduce the need for medical care, and environmental health interventions can be a big part of those interventions that can reduce the need for medical care. The physical environment affects our health. We have a number of areas where we have good evidence and good information on how we can affect health. So, for example, in injury prevention, the Federal Highway Administration has come out with what they call proven safety countermeasures, and these are physical changes to how we design the built environment around transportation that can, for example, reduce pedestrian and bicycle injuries. Similarly, for the physical activity chronic disease area, we have well-supported interventions of ways to get people more physically active, and the Guide to Community Preventive Services, which does a very thorough review of the literature, is able to make a fairly firm supportive statement that says give people places to be more active, they will be more active, with good scientific support behind that. Health impact assessments is what I will be focusing on. This is a tool that, short version, let's get health at the table. How do we make health part of the discussion for decisions being made outside of the health arena? So we know that transportation people make transportation decisions, agriculture, education, housing, a whole range of other sectors make decisions, move forward with policies, build things, but health is not typically at the table. And yet many of those decisions will affect health. Health impact assessment is a tool that has been growing in the US, originally used in Europe, which is where we've gotten a lot of experience from. That, and I'll go over the definition, which came out from National Research Council last year. So it's a systematic process using multiple data sources and analytic methods, and gets input from stakeholders to determine the potential effects on a policy, plan, project, or program on the health of a population and the distribution of those effects on that population, and then provides recommendations on that proposal of how could we improve that proposal. This is prospective. How could we improve the proposal before the final decision is made that would take health into account and end up hopefully with a better proposal that promotes health or mitigates the adverse consequences of what was in the original proposal. Six steps in health impact assessment. It's not cookie cutter. It's done a little bit differently in each place where it is done. Screening is deciding whether there are health impacts at all and whether health should be considered in looking at a proposal. Scoping which health impacts should be considered. Risk assessment is what do we know about? What can we predict are some of the outcomes and health impacts that could occur from this proposal? Recommendations based on those assessments of how could we improve this proposal to promote health or mitigate any adverse consequences that are predicted. Reporting, getting that information back to the decision makers, and then evaluation monitoring is did it make any difference in what happened subsequently. The picture in the lower right-hand corner is a major report that came out last year from the National Research Council. They did a very thorough look at where health impact assessment is in this country and what's also been done internationally. The reference will be in the last slide, but it's a very well-written report done at a very high level with a lot of experts looking at the issue. And what was particularly good on the committee that they put together is they had those who knew a lot about HIA and could give their experience, but they also put people who knew very little about it who could then give a more independent look. Does this make sense? Does this work? So I think they got a very well-done, balanced report at the National Research Council that I commend to you. Where it fits into the work being done by the National Center for Environmental Health is that we've long been involved in infrastructure issues. We've worked with various data sets. We look at multiple health outcomes, and health impact assessment does all of those. There's a number of supporting policies for health impact assessment in the U.S., and no one of these is going to make it happen everywhere, but the fact that it's been written into major policies helps increase attention to HIA, and I think over time will increase its use. So the National Prevention Strategy that came out in the last year or so discusses HIA as, again, this health at the table is really the short version, or health in all policies, you may have heard. National Prevention Strategy has some very good wording in their support of using HIA. Healthy People 2020, which are the national goals for healthy people over the next decade, mentions it. The Health and Human Services Environmental Justice Strategy mentions it. The Strategic Plan for National Center for Environmental Health and Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registry in the Strategic Plan all mention HIA, as well as a few other places. There's an obesity task force from the White House. Michelle Obama was involved, mentions HIA. And there's a number of national-level policies that are discussing HIA as one of the tools that can get health at the table and get health involved in multiple projects and policies. Why are we involved in HIA? It's really what I've been saying, health at the table. It fits into many policies, programs, plans, and projects. It considers the good and the bad, both promoting the good aspects of a proposal and trying to mitigate the adverse functions. It's able to incorporate various types of evidence, and it engages communities to have input into the process. Our current work with HIA in the Healthy Community Design Initiative, which is a group that I was working with full-time and am now a consultant to, we have some resources. We do provide some grants to a limited number of states, and so there's gradually getting some state and local capacity being built. So that money is being used for capacity building, being used for doing some HIAs on the local level. Our group has been developing some training and toolkits to help the use of HIA, and been doing some tracking with partners such as Robert Wood Johnson Foundation and Pew Charitable Trust, been working with them closely on tracking how many HIAs are being done around the country. I'll show you some maps in just a minute. And as well as some research and some evaluation. So where is HIA and where is it going? We've been working with various partners around the country. Here's the map that, there's one just before it, about 2007. There were about 27 completed HIAs. By 2009, we're up to 54 completed HIAs. 2012, earlier this year, around 91, again, more and more states. And as of about a month or so ago, this is looking at both HIAs that are completed as well as those in progress. So we're up to several hundred HIAs. At this point, we're into most states in the nation. Some of these HIAs are supported just by internal funds and the health departments doing them. Quite a few have been supported by Pew Charitable Trust and Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, and CDC has supported some of these. So there's a lot of interest in getting the information out to health departments across the country, and now, as you can see, involvement from quite a few places. A couple of quick examples of completed HIAs and what difference they made. This one is from Deschutes County in Oregon. We work a lot with urban planners, so they had a county comprehensive plan. They were updating it. What do we want this county to look like over the next decade or two? And as the health department was able to look at what was in that plan, they could say, well, here's some things that would improve it for health. And it had to do with safety measures for pedestrians and bicycles and looking at trail systems to include physical activity, but a number of things that were not otherwise in the plan. But by having the health department look through, see what was in the plan, what are some things that could improve that plan before it's finalized. The county commissioners then adopted the revised plans, incorporating those elements that would include those health components to the plan. And long term, then that should lead to health promotion within that county. So by having health considerations in that revision of the plan, it should over time improve the health of that community. And ideally, there would be some monitoring to see did those recommendations actually get incorporated and did it make a difference. But that's a longer term undertaking. Another health impact assessment, this was one in Atlanta in which I have been involved over time. Massive multi-billion dollar project in Atlanta to take an abandoned rail line that circles the city, put light rail on the line, build several thousand acres of parkland, build miles of trails, a number of things in the original plan over about a 25-year period that would clearly just on the surface be very positive for the city in terms of parks, in terms of trails, in terms of transit. And so working with Catherine Ross at Georgia Tech, a number of us at CDC and Catherine and others, put together a look from the health point of view on what would be the health outcomes of doing this. And knowing ahead of time, it was likely to be very positive. And we're able to come up with a number of recommendations, many of which have been incorporated, on here's the good things about the current plans and encouraging them to move forward, and some of them are happening. And one simple one, which can be used in many places, was getting a health person onto some of the decision-making committees so that as the many details of this project move forward, there would be somebody from health who could, on an ongoing basis, help with those. This is the one economic slide, really, in the whole talk, and that is that much of what we look at in health impact assessments has direction but not magnitude. We know that building sidewalks will increase physical activity, but it is much harder to model how much physical activity will occur from those sidewalks and how many healthcare dollars will be saved by that extra physical activity. So HIA is quite compatible with a cost-benefit analysis when you can get the numbers, but many HIAs do not have those numbers. So we get the numbers where we can, and certainly the recommendations that come out of an HIA are encouraging things that will promote health, and that a cost-benefit analysis could be done subsequently when there are numbers available to say what would the cost be of doing that. In some cases, those changes have minimal cost. In other cases, it could be quite substantial. So it's appropriate to do a cost-benefit analysis after an HIA on some of the recommendations when the numbers are available, but they're not always available. Let me skip that. I want to just very briefly mention some of the other types of health-related assessments that are out there. Most of you are aware of environmental impact statements. They have been around for quite a few years, over 40 years from the National Environmental Policy Act. The wording of the National Environmental Policy Act mentions health, and it is certainly possible to incorporate health within environmental impact statements. And we have some good examples of where that has been done. And so it is a step forward to put health into the existing process. Most HIAs have been voluntary. Environmental impact statements are regulatory. As soon as you go into regulatory, it complicates life. The lawyers are out suing over every sentence that isn't legally defensible, and there's a whole range of issues when you get to the regulatory environment. But health can fit, and in some cases has been fit, into the environmental impact statement setting. Cost-benefit analysis, as mentioned, is much more focused on dollar costs. HIA does not focus on that, but it can be done as a next step. And these other types of public health assessments, health risk assessments, have been used within ATSDR, generally related to hazardous waste cleanup. We are working on various tools to improve evidence availability to help improve where HIA is going. And let me just mention these resources, because we do have some good resources out there. We have an online course that was funded by CDC, put together by the American Planning Association. It's about a 5 or 6 hour course that gives the basics of health impact assessment, has been used by several thousand people at this point, and has been updated recently. So for those who just want the basics of HIA, it's a very good way to get a free online course that gives basics of HIA. A group here in San Francisco with collaborators from across the country have put together minimum elements and practice standards for HIA, again, the website up there. The National Research Council report on HIA mentioned earlier is available for download. It's a couple of hundred pages if you want to buy a hard copy, but you can download it. Very well-written, very thoughtful review of the field, where things are and recommendations of where we could be going. The Health Impact Project, funded by Robert Wood Johnson Foundation and Pew Charitable Trust, has really become the largest single funder, because they have more resources than our small group at CDC does, of supporting a lot of HIAs around the country, supporting evaluation and other work. So they've been a very, very supportive and very helpful group for HIA. And the final is the website at CDC for our Healthy Places group, the Healthy Community Design Initiative, that has done a lot of the work that we've talked about. And let me leave with Dr. Portier's final slide. He has a Twitter account for those who want to follow that. So thank you, and happy to take questions. Let me go back to this for anybody who wants to copy. Yeah, hi, John.
John Balz, National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences. Thanks, Andy. That's a great presentation and a nice update. You got me thinking about several things that have happened. We're here in the home of San Francisco, Rajiv Bhatia, and all of his work on HIA. There's been a lot of presentation of his. And we had a great session in Yonta about resilience for climate change.
Okay.
And you know, there's a big difference between HIA and risk assessment is the emphasis on process rather than the product. And you mentioned the emphasis on process as being held at the table, mm-hmm. and that's one piece of it.
Right.
The other piece of the process is the community engagement. Mm-hmm. And with the resilience we were talking about, the investment in social capital and the building of social capital, and that's one potential outcome. Mm-hmm. of a health impact assessment. And I didn't see that as emphasized here, and I'm wondering, as you are doing your evaluations of the health impact assessments, are you looking at that aspect of it as well, the sustained increase
yeah.
in social capital that really should come
yeah.
from our
very, very good comment, and thanks for bringing it up. Health impact assessment does and should include stakeholder engagement and community involvement. What actually happens is some HIAs do and some don't. And so the range of HIAs that are out there range from a full comprehensive one that takes time and resources with community hearings, with stakeholder and substantial involvement, down to the more intermediate and the rapid ones where there can be a desktop HIA done in a matter of hours or days. And my personal feeling is there is a place for all those levels, that if a proposal, you know, if city council lets the health department know that they're voting on a proposal tomorrow night and hands it to the health officer and said, do you have any comments? I am perfectly comfortable with an informed health officer providing some feedback to that on a very short period when they would not have time for community engagement, and at least it would have some health input into it. The ideal is certainly the larger with the community engagement and further involvement over time, but I think there is a place for that whole range of how much stakeholder involvement. There are people, particularly in Europe, who said if you don't have the full stakeholder engagement, don't even call it an HIA. And I'm not real hung up on, I'm more interested in the health of the table and there be health input. And if you want to formally only use the term HIA for when you had the full comprehensive one, that's fine. I think that whole range of having some health input and decisions is what matters. But the ideal is certainly to have substantial community engagement. Certainly the work Rajiv Bhatia has done here in San Francisco has made that a very central part of the work he's done.
Part of your evaluation process.
Yes. So, yeah. Very good comment on what to do about bike sharing programs that have not easily found a way to require helmets. And that's the whole range of injury issues there, where it's basically trade-offs that if you limit it to places where you can require the helmets, you end up making it very difficult to do the bike sharing programs. I mean, that's what the trade-off has been. And so there are opinions on both sides of that. Gee, we shouldn't do them if we can't require our helmets. To, I guess, my personal opinion, not representing anybody on it, is that most of the bike sharing programs have tended to be low speed and not high risk areas, and I would lean toward encourage the helmets for where people can get them, but not prevent people from biking if they can have them. But again, there's a whole range of choices that need to be made there. But it's definitely a trade-off. I think an issue like that we can discuss without a formal health impact assessment, because the issues are fairly clear. What are the trade-offs? And we don't necessarily need the formal steps to get there, because the comments, as you bring them up, we know what those issues are, and it's an appropriate thing to discuss as is without a formal HIA. But.
Thanks.
Okay. Thank you.